is no surprise that on the eve of his historic inauguration, our president sounded a call to service. We cannot allow any idle hands, President-elect Obama said this past January. Everybody's got to be involved. Everybody's going to have to pitch in. Once in office, both the president and first lady have followed through by launching their United We Serve campaign, calling on all Americans to serve our communities and be a part of building a better future for our country. Ladies and gentlemen, the 44th president of the United States, President Barack Obama.
As a result of ever-improving mobility and technology, ours is a society whose actions have implications beyond our own borders. We present a list of rights and responsibilities necessary to ensure a healthy global society.
President Clinton brought his message of global citizenship to the Bay Area today. He wrapped up his speech at UC Berkeley just a short time ago. So, what exactly is global citizenship? ABC 7's political reporter Mark Matthews is live from Berkeley tonight with the answer. Mark.
It was an interesting speech. He told a packed audience here at Zellerbach Auditorium that the most important question is one that rarely got asked in his White House. Anaya Roy is chair of the Global Poverty and Practice Program at UC Berkeley.
So I think the most important thing he said today here at Berkeley was that it is possible to think of a new moment of communitarianism.
Hello again, and welcome to Spotlight, the interview show on RT. I'm Alvin Love, and today we'll talk about changing the world. The global economic crisis made many experts and even heads of state talk more and more often about transformation of the global architecture. The coming of the new team to the White House has only boosted these expectations. Change was the slogan of the recent U.S. presidential campaign. But what change does U.S. and the world really need? We'll ask this question to world-renowned sociologist Amitai Etzioni.
Professor Amitai Etzioni is the founding father and leading voice of contemporary communitarianism. His goal is to catalyze the revitalization of national morale and preserve civil society. Consequently, he rarely discusses communitarianism within its philosophical traditions. Instead, his sprawling, inconsistent, and intellectually deficient writings are pragmatic and aimed at an audience of activists and policymakers rather than intellectuals. The guru of the communitarian movement, Professor Etzioni, wants to do for society what they environmental movement seeks to do for nature. Within his vision, people must feel they are part of something larger than themselves. They must be willing to make sacrifices for the welfare of others and society as a whole. In 2001, he was named among the top 100 American intellectuals as measured by the academic citations in Richard Posner's book, Public Intellectuals, A Study of Decline. Professor Amitai Etzioni is our guest on Spotlight today.
And it matters whether individual empowerment is tied to a vision of common advancement or not. It matters whether not whether we're right or left, but whether we are communitarian or not, whether we believe that fundamentally societies and eventually global movements must rise or fall together.
Hi, I'm Jay Rockefeller. I believe more than any time in my memory that we need to bind together, somehow to bind ourselves together through a sense of shared values to reinvest and rebuild our economy and to make life better for everyone. And this isn't just a matter of doing the economy, fixing the banking system. This is a question of making ourselves better as people by reaching outside of ourselves to help other people. Because in life, that is what really brings happiness.
aren't you more of a secular evangelist than a policy consultant, as it were, in the process of national life?
If I have to choose between those two, then you certainly characterize me correctly.
There's not so much of a debate on the left anymore about capitalism, whether we should have it or not. There's a debate about how to have it. I think capitalism is always going to be with us because capitalism represents part of human nature. But the other part of human nature is communitarianism. There's a natural tendency of human beings, in addition to wanting to do things for themselves, they feel a great responsibility and wanting to be part of the community. And so I think the debate for the new generations, instead of capitalism or socialism, is we're going to have both, and then which proportion of each should we have in order to make this all work? It's a much more sensible debate.
So rather than the voluntary agent being at the center of things, which is the workmanship story, this anti-Enlightenment story subordinates the individual to the practice, to the group, to the inherited system of norms and values. And if you want a contemporary reference point, just again to sharpen the comparison here, compare the Cartesian idea, which puts the willing agent at the center of the universe, with the Ubuntu, which is a kind of African religion.
Is law enforcement sending a message that they'll protect our homeland at any cost? Joining us from D.C. is George Washington University Professor Amitai Etzioni and Joseph Onyx, Senior Counsel at the Constitution Project. Thanks, both of you, for being here. Joseph, since September 11th, Americans have had to fight an enemy that we're not used to fighting. This is someone who melds into society. The rules are not the same.
Well, I think the rules are not the same, but the basic principles should be the same. The Pledge of Allegiance, which we've been talking about recently, says one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. And to me, justice for all means that everybody, even an alleged terrorist, deserves a fair trial.
Amitai, do you agree?
God, no. We are being attacked. We are at war. So first of all, in war, many of the rules which apply in peacetime are suspect.
In this country, under the First Amendment, words of hate, no matter how odious, are not only tolerated, but protected. But after violent incidents like the Oklahoma City bombing and abortion clinic shootings, some argue that the First Amendment, which was meant to protect dissent, is instead protecting hate.
So is it time then to consider limiting hate rhetoric? Or should we be fighting harder than ever to protect its right to exist? Well, joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Amitai Etzioni. He's an author of The Spirit of Community and professor of sociology at George Washington University. Nadine Strossen, president of the American Civil Liberties Union, and thank you both for being with us this morning. Well, Ms. Strossen, when Americans look at these incidents like Oklahoma City, like what goes on at abortion clinics, I suppose it raises the question of whether or not by protecting free speech as strongly as we do, we're not creating a safe house for hate.
Kevin, it's very important to draw the distinction between protecting somebody's right to say something, including hate-filled messages, and on the other hand, agreeing that that is an appropriate thing to say. Professor Etzioni, would you suggest that in some way we need to limit speech in this country?
Well, we already do. There are many steps we can take short of changing the law by having policies in place that we all have the same purpose. They will communicate like one person that certain forms of speech which lead to killing very directly are not acceptable.
So it's this idea of subordinating yourself to an inherited system of norms of and practices in which you find yourself.
Critics say Canada's hate speech laws are not applied consistently, with the mainstream media every day dehumanizing and stigmatizing Middle Eastern people with impunity. On the other hand, those genuine anti-racists who draw attention to Israel's criminal policies of genocide and apartheid are finding their freedom of speech to do so increasingly challenged by powerful pro-Israel lobbyists seeking to conflate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism.
And yet it wasn't until 1978 that the Mormon Church decided to allow blacks to participate fully.
I think there's something in the air that suggests that if Muslims are made to look bad, it's better.
Press TV got in touch with a prestigious Canadian professor and member of the Canadian Islamic Congress who had tried but failed to invoke Canada's hate speech laws to prosecute a journalist in Canada who had disseminated anti-Islamic conspiracy theories in an article published in a prominent Canadian magazine called Maclean's.
Well, I think Canada is one of the few Western countries that it does have a hate speech law. I think it is only useful for the strong and powerful. That the same law has been used successfully in the last maybe 10 years or so by the Canadian Zionist Jewish community against who they consider anti-Semitic.
It is clear that hate speech laws are controversial, and when such laws are being applied inconsistently and in a politicized or ethnicized manner, experts warn that they can only have a negative effect on society. Joshua Blakeney, Press TV, Calgary.
Here is the more general point behind what I'm trying to say. I think it's unfortunate to approach these subjects in this polarized way. One side says, not on your life, and the other said, we have to do it. I think a good discussion of these issues starts by recognizing, which has not been recognized, a priori, that we have two concerns, two fundamental concerns. One, we, of course, must protect our rights, and certainly the right to free speech, and we have compelling public interest. So any serious conversation starts by acknowledging that we have both concerns, and then start asking when yes, when A, when B. Any conversation which says, absent national emergency, doesn't recommend a kidnap situation.
The Labour Party now has its new aims and values, but does all that add up to an idea big enough to seize the popular imagination and inspire a whole raft of clearly identifiable new policies? Well, some in the party believe that an American professor now visiting London has developed just that, the idea of community. He's Amitai Etzioni, and he's been telling Peter Kellner about what he believes a sense of community is all about.
In the old Kent Road, in an open space where bombs had once come screaming down, they sang and danced.
For many, this was the golden age of the community spirit, VE Day, when families filled the streets to celebrate victory in a war in which the British people had worked so closely together. Amitai Etzioni wants to recapture that spirit. Last night, he came to London to deliver a lecture on communitarianism. It's an ugly word that expresses an important idea which is ruffling political feathers on right and left on both sides of the Atlantic.
That we must talk about the moral and social foundation of our society.
Communitarianism starts from the view that two kinds of individualism have failed. The social rights-based individualism of the left and the free market individualism of the right. Etzioni argues that both threaten to dissolve the glue that holds societies together unless we recreate the kind of civil society in which we agree on what's right and what's wrong and cooperate to apply those principles. In some ways, those ideas are familiar enough. Most people yearn for social harmony, even if they disagree on how to achieve it. But Dr. Etzioni has caused a stir because he goes further. He claims that communitarianism is a fully-fledged social philosophy, which deserves to rank alongside and to some extent displace the liberalism of both left and right.
Liberals are afraid to touch the questions of what the future of the family is going to be like. They don't like the term moral values. They shy away from that. They don't want to deal with the question of public safety and crime. They leave all, cede all these areas to the conservatives. It's our argument
that you have to address these issues in a new way, not by imposing values, not by authoritarian answers, but the new dialogue in which all parts of the community will come together to some democratic, inclusive answers.
State do that.
It's not a state business. We have, for instance, it's a school's business. It's a church's business. It's not a government issue. Societies don't change by government. Societies change when the people talk to each other about what's wrong with the environment, what's wrong with the way we treat women, and now what's wrong with our moral and civil order.
So I am here in Social and Political Philosophy looking at the Social Contract Part 2, and I'm looking at communitarianism versus libertarianism. So a communitarianism, it's about being a community and working as a community, and the overall well-being of the community is more important than the well-being of one person or the individual.
We're seeing the growth of community schools in cities like Chicago, where there are 110 community schools, in cities like Portland, where there are 55 community schools, in cities like Lincoln, Nebraska, where there are 33 community schools. And what this is building on an extraordinary, deep, and profound tradition in American society, and indeed in American history.
The founders of this movement were really those who, in the early stages of our country and other societies throughout the world, created these little buildings. And they ingathered, as Ira pointed out, the children. And they ingathered the children to train them on how to make their communities a little better.
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for it.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
The last person there to introduce himself, I remember, was a tall, skinny guy with big ears and a funny name, Barack Obama. And so Barack was one of our first trainers, first people trained in neighborhood organizing in 1982, 83, and 84. Toward the end of those 3 years, he came to me and he said, "You know, I want to go into public life. I think I can see what can be done at the neighborhood level, but it's not enough change for me. I want to see what would happen in public life." And he said, "I think I have to go to law school to do that, get into public life, be elected official." So he said, "Would you write me a letter of reference? You're the only professor I know who would write me a letter." I think he didn't do too well in college, right?
But that's okay. I am still thrilled to be introduced by this man whose vision of service we celebrate today and whose life of service is an inspiration to all of us.
Tell us about your visit to Community Links this morning.
Well, I was absolutely blown away by the dedication and the insight and the multi-fat community service this wonderful, wonderful group of people provides. And my more power to you all.
Okay, thank you very much.
Communitarianism is the inspiration behind one experiment in Birmingham. St. Paul's Community School takes problem children and works with them in small classes.
We create an atmosphere which they describe as a bit like one's own family, where people, of course, are concerned to help each other as people with a long-term interest in each other's lives.
Communitarianism there is undoubtedly benign. Whether St. Paul's is that different from other good schools is a moot point. But across the Atlantic, in Wisconsin, communitarianism has been taken much further. It uses not just encouragement, but coercion to stamp out antisocial behavior, and people are beginning to protest.
Let me say, we can't simply destroy everything which a totalitarian government uses.
This demand for consensus creates a harsh dilemma. Should it be imposed through firm rules and hence risk turning communitarianism into an authoritarian creed? Or should we rely on goodwill and exhortation, in which case communitarians may fail to achieve the idyllic society they want? The same dilemma faces the Labour Party, now that it's shifting from an ideological to an ethical view of socialism. Whether Dr. Etienne has the right answers is a matter of debate. Among left-wing thinkers in Britain, communitarianism is proving controversial, not just because of its view of the state, but because of its underlying social analysis.
Communitarianism presupposes a greater degree of cultural consensus than exists in any modern society, and in particular than exists in Britain. In Britain, at the national level and at lower levels, such communities as exist are characterized by diversity, complexity, and conflict. The communitarian project risks being nostalgist in attempting to roll back this diversity and conflict in our culture.
Community policing is a program that was introduced under the Clinton administration. It was authorized and funded under the Violent Crime Act of 1994. Community policing is a theory that individual rights have broke down the moral fiber of society. It's a hodgepodge of every ideology and every religion on the planet, pretty much. There's a piece of everything in there. They're trying to make a fair and a just world for everyone, but for no one in particular. And basically what the law does at the national and international level is protect global trading rights over national and local businesses. And at the local level, communitarian law balances the rights of the individuals against the rights of the community at large. Community at large.
The U.S. Institute national ID cards or not. Joining us to make that tough call is Amitai Etzioni, a sociology professor at George Washington University and author of The Limits of Privacy, and Barry Steinhardt, associate director of the ACLU and director of its Technology and Liberty Project. Gentlemen, welcome to Tough Call. It's good to have you both here.
Thank you. Thanks.
Barry, I'd like to start with you. I can understand why the ACLU would not like the idea of a national ID card, but I want to focus in on the privacy issue. Do we really have anything that is that private anymore? What does a national ID card do as far as going that step further that you find objectionable?
Well, a national ID card is a way of tracking our movements internally. It will really ratchet up the loss of privacy that we have. But the question we still have to ask is, will it make us any safer? And I think the answer demonstrably is no. People are beginning to realize that this is not a debate between privacy and security. The security benefits are too limited if they exist at all. The kind of ID card that Amitai is talking about, for example, that exists in Europe, is readily available on the open market for purchase, on the black market, I should say. It doesn't make us any safer, but it will mean we'll have the kind of internal passport system that they had in the old Soviet Union, where every movement, every transaction that we're engaged in, assuming we're engaged in them legitimately, and we've got a legitimate ID, which is a big question mark for the terrorists,
will be able to be tracked. That's the kind of privacy that we're preparing to give up for no security benefit.
Let me say, we can't simply destroy everything which a totalitarian government uses. They're using trucks. The German, the Nazis used trains to bring Jews to concentration camps. Are we therefore not going to have trains? There's an enormous difference. A free society is using some tools, and the way a Soviet Union used to do that.
Danger, of course, of becoming a less than free society. But I do want to talk about the biometric issue for a moment. I'm going to tell you it's just raw.
Why not extend the market principle and the market logic further? Now, the term mercenary, is a pejorative. But what is a mercenary system, if not another name, for a market system in military service? So if you believe the labor market is a legitimate way of filling the ranks in the military, here would be another way to put it. Why discriminate in employment on the basis of national origin? Why shouldn't the United States do, now we were the idea of outsourcing was brought up. And if we're concerned, as Craig is, with efficiency, the standard market arguments about efficiency have led to outsourcing in many other labor markets. Why not recruit soldiers from around the world for the U.S. Army, especially from low-wage countries where there are soldiers, potential soldiers, who have the relevant qualifications, who would do a good job, who would be willing to devote a career to it, as Craig wants. Now, there are some non-citizens in the U.S. Army currently. They're legal resident aliens for the most part. But why stop there? Why not outsource if the labor market is morally unobjectionable? And recruit from everywhere. There is the French Foreign Legion, after all.
The communitarian thinkers which I present and analyze are the following: Amitai Etzioni, Michael Walzer, Michael Sandel, Charles Taylor, and Alasdair MacIntyre.
And so the only way we can protect ourselves against such cowardly attacks, where people pretend to be civilians and focus on attacking civilians, is by throwing the book at them. Now, liberty for all, the Constitution never meant to be applied to all gangsters in the world. But even more important, the way we attack this time are by people masquerading as civilians. And as I know from my own experience, I used to do that myself, I forget to say, in my youth fighting the occupation.
But it is a curious fact that throughout this period of growing racial persecution, Nazi intelligence agencies were in constant contact with Jewish organizations abroad. And not just in order to infiltrate them. Hitler's attempt to rid Europe completely of all Jews by exterminating them did not begin until World War II was well underway. Before the war, forced emigration was the preferred tool for driving Jews out of Germany and Austria. And Palestine, the historic lost homeland of the Jews, came to be seen as a good place to go. At the time, it was under British rule and contained a substantial Arab population. Nevertheless, tens of thousands of Jews forced out of Germany settled there. Local Arab opposition to this massive influx was fierce and violent. To protect themselves, Palestinian Jews set up a paramilitary organization, the Haganah. And it made contact with Himmler's SS to facilitate further emigration to Palestine. The meeting was arranged between SS agent Adolf Eichmann and a Haganah representative in Haifa in Palestine on the 2nd of October 1937. Arab anti-Jewish riots prevented that meeting, but they eventually met in Cairo, Egypt, on the 10th of November 1937. There, the Haganah agent attempted to enlist Eichmann's help by hinting at least one other Jewish conspiracy based in Paris to kill Hitler. He promised to look further into this plot, and amazingly, even offered to spy for the Nazis in return for help in getting Jews out of Germany.
Let me say, we can't simply destroy everything which a totalitarian government uses.
Rapid growing exploitation of the world's supply of energy and water is a matter of deep concern, and the toxic byproducts of widespread industrialization have increased atmospheric pollution to dangerous levels. Unless nations will agree to work together to tackle these cross-border challenges posed by population growth, overconsumption of resources, and environmental degradation.
The guru of the communitarian movement, Professor Zioni, wants to do for society what the environmental movement seeks to do for nature.
In a recent article called Communitarianism is a freedom-hating totalitarian philosophy like any other, James Dellingpole briefly defines communitarianism and outlines why he believes that it is at least as dangerous as Nazism, Marxism.
Let me say, we can't simply destroy everything which a totalitarian government uses.
Peter, you've been famous for criticizing individualism. Do you think that individualism is to blame for the current economic crisis?
Yes, very much so. Surely there is room for self-interest. Surely there's room for expression of the individual. But all the time has to be balanced by concern for the common good, for community, for the environment, for things.
And that any healthcare funding plan that is just, equitable, civilized, and humane must redistribute wealth from the richer among us to the poorer and the less fortunate. Excellent healthcare is by definition redistribution.
Let me give you a little definition of communitarianism here. The communitarian philosophy is the concept of positive rights, which are the rights or guarantees to certain things. These include state-subsidized education, state-subsidized housing, a safe and clean environment, universal health care, and even the right to a job with a concomitant obligation of the government or individuals to provide one.
The communitarian movement, Professor Zioni, wants to do for society what the environmental movement seeks to do for nature. Within his vision, people must feel they are part of something larger than themselves. They must be willing to make sacrifices for the welfare of others and society as a whole.
Confirming that 75% of historic emissions of greenhouse gases originated in the countries of North that followed a path of irrational industrialization. Noting that climate change is a product of the capitalism system. World Conference on Climate Change and Mother Earth Rights has an objective. to analyze the structural and systematic causes that drive climate change and to propose radical measures to ensure the well-being of humanity in harmony with nature.
Wear the bell out for this. Swim out the metropolis. Cause ice get melt like sun-kissed Icarus. We'll lick Chad and dry to Baghdad. Yo, your numbers don't add. Just the greenhouse gas. Appalachian coal miner. Fisherman in Bangladesh. Uncle Sam making bets. Write his name by the Exxon Valdez. Robbie Asmus next. Little Johnny got a little funny knob in his neck. So what's the problem with that?
Mr. Clinton claims that the original Tea Party patriots were communitarians. Really, Mr. Clinton? Communitarianism is a late 20th century offshoot of postmodern thought.
I think, therefore, I am. It's I am because we are, and since we are, therefore, I am.
And that was when my life changed forever. I often say that while I was technically born in New York, I was really born for real in West Virginia when I became a Vista.
Just the corporate exec would extract that oil from the boils of the backs and that Nigerians. Give me that. Pass out texts like reps through the Mavericks. Offset politics. Copenhagen, no debate, you need the reparations. And why you waiting another 600 acres gone in the Congo and Amazon by the end of the song?
The guru of the communitarian movement, Professor Zioni, wants to do for society what the environmental movement seeks to do for nature.
On it, we so on it. Gotta be on it, if we ain't on it, we the corner. Who, me, you, everyone in their mama. It's our world, so defending it with honor. On it, we so on it. Gotta be on it, if you ain't on it, disappointed. Take a look at the world around, cause the temperature is rising, the time is now.
The guru of the communitarian movement, Professor Zioni, wants to do for society what the environmental movement seeks to do for nature. With
green, go solar, go agriculture, fiber, McDonald's, and Coca-Cola. All corporate vultures should burn in the toxic sulfur they emit. For every dollar they get, they exploit the culture and take resources, control the media, and censor the voice of the voiceless. Sitting back fat in their office, they don't see people, just profits and losses. They don't give a damn about the trees. The Dolphins. You green if you don't know it's the green for the fortune. Even the green movement better be cautious. Funded by the corporate machine when the interest is crossing. We can't depend on the Congress. Need a grassroots movement to raise the conscience, to engage the masses, to seize the knowledge. Get our fingers in the dirt so we can reap the harvest. The seed wanna grow, but it's deep in darkness. The hood gotta learn how to turn the garbage into healthy soil. We could help the world, but we running out of time like they running out of oil.
Exploitation of the world. World supply of energy and water.
On it, we so on it. Gotta be on it, if we ain't on it, we the corner. Who, me, you, everyone in their mama. It's our world, so defending it with honor. On it, we so on it. Gotta be on it, if you ain't on it, just support it. Take a look at the world around, cause the temperature is rising, the time is now.
The rapid and growing exploitation of the world's supply of energy and water.
Said, and I quote Mr. Clinton here, "You need to take back this Tea Party idea," he told the crowd in Boston. "They say that the original Boston Tea Party was anti-government, but that is wrong. The Massachusetts Bay Colony had a strong government. They weren't liberal or conservative. They were communitarians."
Is it time then to consider limiting hate rhetoric? Hate rhetoric.
Um, you're looking to your futures and your careers. I hope so much that you will consider what I consider the very noble concept of public service.
Which means they knew we're all in this together.
You can call it politics, you can call it serving your country in any other way, teaching, nursing, you know, there's so many ways to do it. But working together to restore our communities.
Affirming that in order to ensure the fulfillment of human rights in the 21st century is necessary to recognize and respect Mother Earth rights. And develop an action plan to advance the establishment of a climate justice tribunal, to define strategies for action and mobilization to defend life for climate change and defend Mother Earth rights. Evo Morales Ayma, President of the Pronacional State of Bolivia. We have confirmed the attendance of more than 12 presidents around the world and more than 60 countries, official delegations. We are confident to achieve and exceed our goal of 80 countries participating in the event. Thank you very much.
Let me say, we can't simply destroy everything which a totalitarian government uses.
Suggesting in this title, Watermelons, that the environmentalists are green on the outside, but communist red on the inside?
That's exactly it. And I wouldn't just say communist red. I'd also say, you know, the fascist movement and the Nazis, they had a lot in common, a lot more in common with communism than the two sides make out. So I'm talking about the red, not just for communism, but for totalitarianism. And, you know, trust me, the war against totalitarianism didn't end when we defeated Nazism, when we defeated Stalinism. This is totalitarianism by a different means. It's totalitarianism, I suppose, through what you might call communitarianism. The idea that we the experts, are doing all this with your consent for your own good. So we're destroying the economy for your own good because, you know, we need to make the world a better place. And the only way we can do that is by bombing Western industrial civilization back to the Dark Ages.
So this is a fundamental difference. It doesn't get more fundamental than this, I think, because as you've seen, in every variant of Enlightenment thinking, it's the willing creative agent that is at the ultimate bottom of the heap. And here, it's not. It's the subordinated individual and the community to which the community or the practice or the tradition to which the person is subordinated that is at the very bottom of the heap. So this is really a fundamental difference.
Perhaps the most important component, however, is the responsibility to protect the rights of others. As human beings, we are naturally self-centered, and without a constant reminder that life is not a zero-sum game, we fall into primordial patterns of me over we. With the goal of the advancement of our global society, such patterns are unacceptable.
Okay.
tomorrow with a lecture on the new global architecture mechanisms of transition. That's what it's called. Meanwhile, in London, the Russian President Dmitry Medvedev was talking about a new architecture of Euro-Atlantic security and a new financial architecture. Is it only a verbal coincidence, or are you talking about one and the same thing with the Russian President?
We may not be talking exactly about the same thing, but it's a very profound recognition that they're all institutions which allowed each nation to simply follow its own interests without mindful not of the global community.
The question is, though, if we're moving in this direction, why not try and just see if perhaps it is a solution? The solution we have now didn't work.
I don't think we're moving in this direction at all. In fact, all the polling data recent days shows that Americans are resuming their longstanding historical opposition to the concept of a national ID.
I'm a man who sees life in terms of missions, missions defined, and missions completed. I will not allow this country to be made weak again. I will keep America moving forward, always forward, for an endless, enduring dream and 1,000 points of light. This is my mission, and I will complete it.
Discusses communitarianism within its philosophical traditions. Instead, his sprawling, inconsistent, and intellectually deficient writings are pragmatic and aimed at an audience of activists and policymakers rather than intellectuals.
I'm going to tell you, it's just wrong.
We are being attacked. We are at war. So first of all, in war, many of the rules which apply in peacetime are suspended.
I'm going to tell you, it's just wrong.
Pacioli is a bad guy.
First of all, in war, many of the rules which apply in peacetime are suspended.
I'm going to tell you, it's just wrong.
Pacioli is a bad guy.
So first of all, in war, many of the rules which apply in peacetime are suspended.
I'll just tell us that Pacioli is a bad guy.
He is.
He climbs up the tower for his Yankee villain.
Are you gonna go get Etzioni and stop that evil bad guy? And who's going with you?
Come on. Yeah, to drive. You could buy a biggest Batman car for me.
I could, and then you could drive the Batman car to DC. To see Etzioni? Yeah? Do you want to give him a ride in your car?
No, he's a bad guy. He's always the Yankee Blender. I want the tower, so he's a bad guy.
What is that? Is this Batman's car?
No, it's a fake car because it has no engine.
How do you know that?
And it doesn't have any.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well, is it kind of fun anyway, that even though it's fake?
Oh. Yeah, but I'm fake.
What's that?
I only want to have a real life engine.
If it doesn't have an engine, it's not real.